Insider Radio, part of thefinsider.com and the SB Nation Network. And now, your host, Matthew Cannata, joined by co-hosts Josh Houts and Aaron Sutton.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Finsider Radio. This is Matt Cannata. I'm joined by Josh Houts and Aaron Sutton. And we are here recapping the Miami Dolphins' wild and crazy free agency period. Dolphins, of course, not making really any moves, which is what I believe to be the smart thing for once. It seems like the Dolphins are finally doing what we've all wanted them to do for many, many years. Things that they are doing that we have not seen since the Bill Parcells era when he took over the Miami Dolphins almost a decade ago. Over a decade ago, I should say. It is a full loaded teardown with this Miami Dolphins organization. They are making the right moves. They are not panicking. They are not overpaying. They are not being used for leverage. It is a new day in Davie. And I believe the Miami Dolphins are finally on the right track for long-term success. Obviously, they need to make the right moves moving forward. But they are setting themselves up very nicely for the future. When you look at the free agent signings, again, there really was none. You had the trade of Ryan Tannehill, which we'll obviously touch on in just a little bit. They're trying to move a few players right now. They're trying to move Robert Quinn. And we're going to talk about how they're doing it in terms of paying other teams basically for draft picks. They paid part of Ryan Tannehill's salary and shipped him off to the Titans for a 2020 fourth round pick. They paid Robert Quinn's $1 million bonus in an effort to help make him more appealing, and they're willing to pay even more to have a team give them a draft pick in return in 2020. So we're going to talk about that and this new strategy that we're seeing and the merits of it and whether or not there is a downside. Because on Monday afternoon, Joe Banner, former general manager in the NFL and former executive, came at me. He had put up a tweet about how he thought it was foolish what the Dolphins were doing. And I responded and basically said that it's actually a brilliant idea. It's Stephen Ross's money. There's really no impact on the cap at all for future years after this year. And then he quote tweeted me and he said it's a bad idea. It's not a bad idea, Joe. It's actually a really great idea. And again, we're going to talk about that. But I'm going to bring in Houts. I'm going to bring in Sutton. You two, what are your thoughts on the early stages of free agency? Obviously, Miami not making any moves. Sitting tight, watching everyone else go crazy. They're losing players, but they are gaining compensatory picks in the 2020 draft. What do you guys say?
You know what? We shouldn't expect to feel comfortable through all this. So obviously, there's going to be some mixed feelings as we go through all of this. Wish the best to all the players who have left the Miami Dolphins to go play for other teams. But Matthew, you said it, and I'm willing to explore this tonight. This idea of basically money for draft picks, we're kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of whoring ourselves out. But hey, I mean, Florida isn't it like the sales tax thing? They don't have sales tax down there. So like there's gotta be some type of like money related brilliance here that hasn't been explored yet. And I think the Browns were one of the first people to do it with, ironically enough, Brock Osweiler a few years ago when they took his contract basically, but got a trade pick, trade value in return. So I think it's just a different way of exploring that type of scenario where we're looking to, you know, if it costs a few extra dollars to get a draft pick and that's the difference in moving the needle in a negotiation, why not open it up?
Yeah, and I think you touched on it. Why haven't the Dolphins done this before? Why haven't they used this Chris Greer method? You know, he's going out there and they're bringing in these free agents. They brought in Trey Flowers. They brought him into, you know, they did an interview with him. They were probably interested in him. They chose to stand pat and not go by his price tag. Same thing with Juwan James. Great player, but the Dolphins got outbid and they let him walk. I mean, this is something different that you're seeing from the Miami Dolphins. Probably the same thing with Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, they have this price tag for these players and they're sticking to it. And you just wonder why the Dolphins haven't done it in the past. You guys both have touched on it. We're going to talk about on this show, but what they're doing, you know, they moved Tannehill. Yes, Stephen Ross opened up his checkbook and helped make that trade go through. But just overall, you just got to feel a breath of fresh air with the way this organization's being run. You know, not a lot of leaks are coming out, and just all the signings, you know, and an Eric Rowe, he's a low risk, high reward type player. You got a 1 year deal. You know, if he goes out there and balls out, this is a guy who is very familiar with his coaching staff. You know, he goes out there and balls out. Now you got a corner that you can sign next season. You know, you bring in these different assets, a Clive Walford. We know what he is. I mean, he isn't a game changing tight end, but he is a tight end that I'm sure he has a meaning in this offense. And the same thing with Dwayne Allen. So they're bringing in all these low risk, high reward players, and they're not overpaying for people. And I think that's the biggest thing. Personally, I'm trying to hold back my excitement because we all know what the tank and everyone wants to talk about tanking. We all know what it is, but some of the moves the Dolphins have made has been very smart, and you got to like the way Chris Greer is starting to do things.
There have been rumblings from what I've heard that, you know, Chris Greer wanted to always run a tight ship, but it was Mike Tannenbaum who had control of the money, and he just obviously went crazy with everything. And Adam Gase wanted to win, so it was kind of Tannenbaum and Gase. Not that they got along, but they both had the same philosophy in terms of spending, trying to get their guys in here. We just saw how well that worked out, meaning it didn't work out. So, yes, I think a lot of fans are happy with this. It's going to be a rough season. The Dolphins, again, not making really any moves for free agency. They released Andre Branch and Ted Larson a few days before free agency was set to begin. They released Danny Amendola. They signed Dwayne Allen. And I do want to touch on Dwayne Allen a quick second in just a bit. They re-signed Devontae Parker. They renegotiated his contract, brought the cap number way down, And it's a very good, low-risk, high-reward deal. They released Josh Sitton. How you just mentioned, they signed Eric Rowe. They also signed Clyde Walford, tight end. Then they traded Ryan Tannehill in 2019 sixth-round pick to the Titans for a 2019 seventh-round pick and a 2020 fourth-round pick. And then on Monday, they signed guard center Chris Reed, who's a developmental piece and who could provide some depth on the offensive line there. Real quick about Dwayne Allen, Houts. I know you tweeted something out about Dwayne Allen. You put up a video clip of him blocking Khalil Mack. What can you say about him?
Yeah, well, let's just make one thing very clear. Khalil Mack was only playing on one leg. It was just kind of a little bit of a joke. But, I mean, I think Dwayne Allen fits a piece that this team needs, a key role in this Chad O'Shea offense. What we saw with New England was the multiple tight end sets. You need a guy like Dwayne Allen who I think he had only 14 catches or maybe it was 13 over the last 2 years. But what does that matter when the guy can go out there and block and let maybe Mike Gesicki, the guy that runs like he's in quicksand, maybe he'll go out there and make some plays this year. So you like that they're bringing in all these different tight ends. I expect big sets out of them, and hopefully that means a lot more running of the football.
Sutton, Devontae Parker, your thoughts on that signing?
I mean, it was interesting. It was, I think, a smart move from a team perspective to get his cap number down and was seemingly able to get him to buy into that. He seems to be in a let's prove myself sort of mentality. At least that's what he's presented publicly. We never know exactly what's going on with Devontae, but at least we have him at a cheaper number and we have a perimeter receiver who's going to have the size speed type of requirements. So we want, whether or not it all pans out from a health related standpoint, well, you know, that remains to be seen.
Dolphins also lost Cam Wake in free agency. He was an unrestricted free agent. He's headed to the Titans, actually signed a 3-year deal and got, I think, $11 million guaranteed or something around there. Houts, at 37 years old, the guy is an ageless wonder. Can he continue to make an impact in Tennessee?
I mean, you can never count Cameron Wake out. He's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. What he's going to bring to that locker room as far as leadership, you know, going in there day in and day out, first man in, last one out. I'm sure he's a monster in the weight room. I mean, this is things that these young players can, you know, you see a guy, what he can do in that locker room. And same thing with Frank Gore when he came in here, he helped the running backs. Cameron Wake's been in that locker room for how many years? I mean, he was a pivotal piece to the Miami Dolphins over the last 10 plus years. I mean, what he's done here is just awesome. And you just hope to see that, you know, hopefully he can carry on his legacy in Tennessee.
And before we jump into the cap conversation and money conversation, Sutton, your thoughts with Ryan Tannehill being shipped off to the Titans the end of the Ryan Tannehill era in Miami?
I think the weird thing existentially, you know, just with having Ryan, who's been on our team for so long, and Cam Wake, who's been on our team for so long, and it's just like you see this news and it's just like they're like Kaiser Soze, poof, they're gone. And I don't even know what Dolphins Twitter is going to do with itself without having Ryan Tannehill to fight about. And it's still, I put up a GIF about thinking that this conversation about Ryan Tannehill might be over. And trust me, it's going to rage on for another couple of years. He's just that type of player. But wish the best for him. And obviously said all the right things while he was here, did all the right things, said all the right things as he exited on his way to Tennessee. And kudos to the Dolphins organization being able to get some draft capital in return. I think when we looked at that QB market after some of those guys had signed, we were like, I don't know if there's any market for Ryan. And as a result, how are we going to get any trade value for him? So the fact that we were able to explore that, and certainly looks like 2020 because of that move, seeing the draft capital kind of focused on the 2020 aspect of it, I thought that was interesting, because maybe we are really looking at 2020 as being a really big swing year for the Dolphins organization.
So the part of the reason why the Dolphins were able to move Ryan Tannehill is because they paid part of his guaranteed salary for the 2019 season. And they're trying to do the same thing with Robert Quinn and get a better draft pick in return. So they got the 2020 fourth round pick, and it's no secret the Dolphins are really gearing up for 2020 and beyond there. And looking at this year is just kind of a tear down and rebuild type of year. But I wanted, touch on that, because we saw it kind of happen a few years ago when the Texans traded Brock Osweiler to the Cleveland Browns. It was basically a salary dump. And we've never really seen it, though, anywhere else. And the Dolphins are really approaching this. I think it's brilliant. People say, well, it's going to count against the cap this year because they're paying part of his salary. Yes, it's going to. But let's be honest, folks. You paid about $5 million of Ryan Tannehill's salary. You're probably going to pay about $5, $6 million of Robert Quinn's salary. That's $11 million. This year's cap is $189 million. So when you really break it down, that's probably, I'm not excellent in math here. Son, help me out. How to help me out. But I don't even think that's 1% of your total cap. If it is, it's just at 1%. It's very, very little when you look at the entire picture. And I don't think the Dolphins are going to get to the point that it's so bad where they're sitting there with only $10 million of cap space left to go. And going into 2020, they're scheduled to have over $120 million as it stands right now. And let's face it, they're probably going to be moving on from Rashad Jones either during this year's draft or after this year's season, because his cap number becomes much more manageable in 2020. And it's I haven't seen anyone really say it's a bad idea, with the exception of Joe Banner when he called me out on Monday morning.
And as someone who thinks that salary cap chaos, for lack of a better expression, is kind of a fan-made sort of thing to get worried about, you're talking about pennies on the dollar again. And if it's able to swing draft capital and, having compensatory picks being able to be traded now, and even with Ryan Fitzpatrick coming into the fold, we're either losing, depending on the playing time, maybe the fifth rounder or the seventh rounder, again, depending on snaps. But the fact that those are able to be traded now and we're loading up in 2020, and it looks like we're exploring ways to even enhance that, I think you have to look into these things. And I just don't think we've had our backs against, I know it's weird to say, but it's like we haven't had our backs against the wall in this sort of way before. We've just tried to like spend our way out of it. And now we're taking a completely different approach to this. So I think, again, it's going to ruffle some feathers with fans, and it's going to, we're going to feel confused at times, and we're going to feel like they aren't doing what they should be doing at times. But I promise you that it's going to be based in a plan and a logic, and whether that works out or not remains to be seen, but it's going to be, there's going to be one hell of a plan in place.
Yeah. And after they work their way out of all this craziness, you know, there's probably going to be a movie similar to Moneyball about the Miami Dolphins and, you know, the 2022 Super Bowl champion Miami Dolphins, and how they, you know, they constructed this crazy team with, you know, these different methods of Chris Greer ways. But let's be honest, the cap is a huge misconception. A lot of people like to go out there and, you know, the sky is falling type stuff. Heading into this offseason, everyone was complaining about how little money the Miami Dolphins have. And yes, lots of teams went out there and spent, but I think they're in top five right now in cap space. I could be wrong, but I think a lot more money is going to come off the books. And like Kanata say, you know, Rashad Jones is probably gone. TJ McDonald, who knows what he's going to do? Kiko Alonso. I mean, there's these players you could just list off all day long that, you know, maybe they're
Robert Quinn.
Yeah. He's likely gone any day now. Right. I mean, they're doing the right thing. They're going out there and they're finding these ways. Or Ryan Tannehill. No one ever thought for 1 second Ryan Tannehill was going to net a hot dog at a gas station. And you know what? Somehow, some way, Chris Greer turned that thing into a fourth round pick. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Like you guys said, they're loading up for 2020. It's anyone's guess as to what quarterback they're looking at. You know, everyone keeps saying Tua, but you just, there's too much smoke there. I know we're going to talk about it 100 times, but whoever their quarterback is, they are loading up with a crap ton of draft picks. They're going to find a way to get that guy come hell or high water.
And I think it helps kind of soften what happens to the Dolphins depending on how many wins we get next year. Being able to accumulate draft capital doesn't make it such a pressurized situation to lose. So I'm not suggesting that we're tanking or anything like that. What I'm suggesting is that having this increased pool of picks makes it okay if we quote unquote accidentally win six games next year.
And the Dolphins might win six games because they signed Ryan Fitzpatrick to be their quarterback this year, their bridge quarterback, their tank quarterback, whatever you want to call it. But it's going to be fun to watch Fitzpatrick. You know, he's a gunslinger. We know he doesn't care really what goes on the field. He likes to go out and have fun. It's a 2-year contract worth about $11 million with incentives and such. Fitzpatrick, the beard, the swag that he brings to the field. You got to believe that Albert Wilson and Kenny Stills are feeling some type of way right now because of their speed. And because of Fitzpatrick's ability to throw the ball deep, not always the most accurate guy out there when throwing the deep ball, but man, when he hits, the sky is the limit when he is on fire. So there is one thing for sure. You never know what Fitzpatrick you're going to get when he steps on the field on Sunday, but you do know it's going to be one hell of a ride when he takes that field. I think we're going to see shades of Fitzpatrick's year this year with the Buccaneers when he was on fire. And we're going to see shades of him when he was with the Jets or with the Texans or with the Titans or with the Bills or with the Bengals or with the Rams when they were in St. Louis. The dude has been in the league for 13 years. That is crazy. 13 years. He's been a starter in a few spots. The best record that he's ever had, and this is insane, is 10-6 with the Jets in 2015. That's when he started all 16 games and led them to the playoffs. And then everyone was like, okay, maybe he finally found his groove. Next year with the Jets, 3-8, then went to the Buccaneers, played in six games as a starter, went 2-1. Last year as a starter, he went 2-5, started seven games, but he had a really great tier, and although the Buccaneers weren't winning, he was lighting the world on fire. One of PFF's highest rated quarterbacks, I believe in the top 10 last year. It would be so Dolphins though, right? If Fitzpatrick all of a sudden this year in 2019 at 37 years old or 36 years old finally finds his groove and pulls a Rich Gannon almost and just finds a way to keep winning. That would be the Dolphins' luck. But it's gonna be fun. But I mean, you look at his record as a starter: 4-7-1, 4-4, 4-9, 6-10, 3-6. The only year, like I said, 10-6 with the Jets. Anywhere else, the highest he's gotten is 6 wins. And if the Dolphins are in fact going all in on Tua, and like you alluded to, Sutton, I don't think they are. I would watch for Justin Herbert, or I would watch for Dwayne Haskins or Kyler Murray in this year's draft. I think the Dolphins have something else planned up their sleeve. But if, in fact, they do want to tank this year, I think they have their right quarterback. No matter how much he slings the ball, Fitzpatrick eventually turns into Fitzpatrick, and I don't think the Dolphins are going to win a lot of games regardless of whether or not he's behind center. Your thoughts, Houts and Sutton, on this signing by the Dolphins?
I love it. I mean, you see what type of quarterback he can be. We see the good, the bad, and the ugly with him. I think he had 300-400-yard games last year in Tampa. He is a gunslinger, and he just YOLOs the football, just throws up bombs. And the biggest thing, I mean, you named off the Albert Wilsons, the Jakeem Grants, and what he might mean to them. One man that's very excited is Devontae Parker, and earlier today he tweeted out, "Congratulations, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and welcome to Miami. Looking forward to creating some magic together. It's time to get into the lab and go to work." Then he hashtagged it New Beginnings. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm seeing a completely different Devontae Parker. You don't know if this is something the organization kind of said, or, you know, maybe there was a coach that kind of rubbed him the wrong way. Devontae Parker seems a lot more outgoing lately. But it's going to be interesting to see how him and Ryan Fitzpatrick do get that magic together, because, you know, Devontae Parker's the biggest receiver on the team. He's the guy who can go up that high point the football. Ryan Fitzpatrick loves to be a gunslinger, loves to have that mentality that, you know what, why the hell not? I'm just going to throw this up and someone's going to come down with it. I don't know how it affects the Dolphins' chances this year. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick is Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, he's going to have the good, but there's going to be far more bad, and this team's going to win a lot less games than they win. I think the biggest thing to me, I wanted Blake Bortles here in Miami. I thought he'd be the better get, but at the end of the day, when you look at it, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a veteran. He's been in the league for 15 years. I mean, what he's done, you know, in different locker rooms, he is a veteran presence, and who better than for some rookie to learn after than Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think the Dolphins draft a guy in the mid rounds this year, and then they go after one of them high prized quarterbacks next season. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's going to be fun because the beard, the glasses, looks like straight out of Narcos. I mean, it's going to be fun, and I'm here for it. Fitzmagic on offense, it's magic on defense.
Yeah, I love the mood. I love the move. I will drink some beer and watch Ryan Fitzpatrick play quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. I just want to take a step back and just appreciate this dude's career for a second. He's assuming he plays, you know, he doesn't have a Ryan Tannehill tear his ACL in training camp and not play at all. He will have played for 25% of the NFL. So he's like, Matthew, I know you don't watch TV other than the NFL and America's Got Talent, but there's this basketball player and his name's Jamal Crawford, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is the Jamal Crawford of the NFL. He's played for everybody, and if my experience at the combine informed me of anything, is that everybody knows everybody. And if you are the type of player who can be accepted, welcomed, and initiated and a big part of every locker room that you're in, you're a pretty good dude, and you kind of get it. And Ryan yep. Fitzpatrick just gets it. And I think having Dan Orlovsky on the show really opened my eyes to what a backup quarterback is expected to do on a team. And I know Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be the starting quarterback, presumably, of this team, unless something crazy happens in the draft this year. But having that type of guy, whether it is to just kind of instill belief and the process as it goes forward, because he has so many connections with football players, or it's because they want him to start, but they also want to keep him for that second year to really be a nice segue for the rookie quarterback that they may invest in 2020. Either way, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think, is just a classy selection as, you know, this organization, this pendulum is up, and it's getting ready to swing down, hopefully, but it's like kind of stuck up at the top right now. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of those guys that is a good person to have in the locker room, hoping to get that pendulum to swing back down. And I think it was a good move for us. Obviously, you know, the actual quarterback play is going to be inconsistent as hell. But because there's going to be those ups and downs throughout the season, I think that it still has the potential to be fun, even though we might lose more games than we're used to.
There's a lot of questions about the future of this team at quarterback. I kind of mentioned it before we talked about Fitzpatrick. But I'm going to throw this to you before we wrap up the show here. Gun to your head. Who are the Dolphins picking for their quarterback? Is it Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, Drew Lock? Is it Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa, however you say his last name? Gun to your head. Is it any of those guys? Son, we'll start with you.
Yes. Which one? Man, that sucks. I'm going to go Herbert.
Yeah, and if you're going Herbert, I mean, that was kind of where I was leaning. I know that there were lots of smoke last season on the Dolphins' interest in him, but if the Dolphins come away with any of those guys, like you said, Sutton, that would be quite the haul. Me, I'm going to go with a little bit of an X factor. Let's just go Tyree Jackson. Let's just say the Dolphins, you know, they got Ryan Fitzpatrick to groom a young player this year, and then they're going to go all in next year. Well, I'll go with Tyree Jackson.
I personally think they're going to get their quarterback in this year's draft. I think they're putting out a masterful smokescreen, and I think they're going to make their move. I'm not sure if it's going to be in the first round if Dwayne Haskins falls to them. I think they will make the move for him. But also, I do believe if Kyler Murray starts to fall a little bit, they will try to make a move for him as well. It's going to be an interesting 5 weeks until the NFL draft. Don't expect to hear a lot because, as you both alluded to at the top of the show, the leaks are not coming out this year. Brian Flores, Chris Greer, Marvin Allen, Reggie McKenzie are running a very tight ship. And while it hurts us because we can't provide you with the inside information because we're not getting as much, we're still getting a little bit, but not as much. As fans, as someone who wants to have success in this organization, it's great for the way they're doing things. Any last thoughts, Houts or Sutton?
I want to close on Juwan James, and this wasn't...
Oh, yes. You know what? I forgot about to mention this part because I know there's some juicy stuff on him.
Okay, so my brother-in-law, his uncle, was the offensive line coach at Tennessee with Juwan James when he was in school. And I happened to be at my brother-in-law's bachelor party when we were... had his uncle on speakerphone, and it wasn't that far removed from when we drafted Juwan James. And basically, my brother-in-law's uncle was I admit I don't remember what he said verbatim, but the impression that I got was he was a little surprised that Juwan James was a first-round pick. And when you kind of reflect back on the situation we were at and needing a tackle, that was, you know, Juwan James had played right tackle his whole career at Tennessee, and that's exactly what we needed. And we were a little bit pigeonholed. So for people, and I know the offensive line, for God's sake, I'd love to stop talking about it just like anybody else. But from a economical perspective and a just kind of building a long-term consistent winner perspective, I don't think anybody should be that distraught about losing Juwan James. I know it's another hole that we need to fill on the team, but I think this was another decision that the organization got right.
For me, there's no way the Dolphins could have matched that price tag. I mean, the Dolphins did the right thing. You said Juwan James, he's a good player, but that's about where it ends. You kind of know what he is. Top paid right tackle in all of football. No thanks.
So we will see how this all shakes out moving forward. And also in the latest edition of the Monday Morning Quarterback, last week it had said something with sources about supposedly saying that they were waiting to see which team scooped up Juwan James because they had to game plan to hide James's weaknesses, and they had to do everything they could and spent so much energy to assign help to him throughout the games. And we saw it too. We saw mental lapses. We saw physical lapses. We saw his really inability to get out of space and lay down the blocks. It just opens another hole on the line. But like you said, Sutton, I don't think Dolphins fans should freak out too much. I think you could find a serviceable right tackle not pretty easily, but you could find someone who's going to get the job done. Just as good as Juwan, if not better. The Dolphins have tons of holes. Again, that's why I said it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens if a quarterback or two starts to fall towards that number 13 pick, if the Dolphins are going to make the move this year, or if they'll stay put and likely trade down to accumulate more picks. It's too bad in a way. Before we just finish here, it's just too bad because we've said it on this show, and I had the information, and I said this during the draft and after the draft last year, that the Dolphins and the Saints had a deal lined up before the draft. Dolphins were going to trade back to the end of the first round. They were going to get the Saints' first-round pick this year. Had that happened, the Dolphins would have had two first-round picks this year, and that would have been plenty of ammo to go up and get either Kyler Murray if he falls past number one, or Dwayne Haskins if he starts to fall. Yes, the Dolphins would have not gotten Minkah Fitzpatrick. Who knows who they would have gotten, but sometimes you just sit there and think, and you wonder what if. So the Dolphins had that trade lined up last year. I'm sure they'll have trades lined up this year. The draft is a beautiful thing. We'll have you posted with all the latest information that we're hearing. Hopefully bringing on some star-studded guests in the next few weeks. As we head towards the draft and as we continue to see how the Dolphins' plan unfolds. That's going to do it for us here on this episode of Finsider Radio. For Aaron Sutton and Joshua Houts, I am Matt Cannata. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time.
That was Finsider Radio, part of the Finsider.com and the SB Nation Network.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, because we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami has a Dolphin, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami.